out of bed about 10 till 4. It's turkey time. Old Tommy Turkey says the wood's on fire. Strutting and a drumming and burning with desire.
We're back.
Yeah, baby, he was doing a little turkey time. Come a little closer for a little surprise. What a show. Cannot believe we're in the last segment. This week's story time is a boy's first turkey. This is a story about my first turkey back in 1962. Back in 1983, I was on one of my early first media hunts, outdoor writer hunts. And at that hunt, I had Tom Hugler from Michigan, who was with Outdoor Life, Jerry Bethke, the editor with Outdoor Life at the time, Michael Pierce. Also had a great friend, Jeff Murray. And we were on the Mineral Fork Creek, and we were also hunting Johnson Mountain. And we were around the fire and started talking, and they asked me about my first turkey, and I told them a little bit of history about my first turkey. And so Tom Hugler and Michael Pierce visited with my grandma on the porch, and she told them the story, and they both said, this has to be published. So they asked me to write it. So I wrote the story the best I could at that time, and it was published in the 1986 issue of Outdoor Life magazine. I also included it in one of my books, and it's without question the story that really helped my career when I first started getting in full-time professional turkey hunting, a boy's first turkey. So I hope you enjoy it. It's from when I was a little boy back in the hills. My most requested story ever, a boy's first turkey. Here we go. Okay, boys and girls, it's story time with your Uncle Ray. My grandfather took one last sip of coffee, pushed his breakfast plate aside, and stood as he pulled out his old pocket watch. Opening the lid of the old timepiece, he said, "You better be going, boy, if you want to kill a turkey." His words caught me off guard, so much so that it was several seconds before I could stammer a reply. But, Pop, aren't you going with me?" "I'd like to, Ray. But, you know, I've got chores to do," he answered, putting a hand on my shoulder. "Besides, the only way you're really going to learn is to get up there and do it by yourself. Now, come on, you'd better get going." I stood there in a state of shock and watched the old man leave the room to get his trusted Winchester 97 and a handful of shells. Following him to the back door, I still couldn't believe what was happening. Just outside the door, he reached up and took down a kerosene lantern, scratched a wooden match against its base, lit it, and handed it to me. "You know where to go on a mountain and what to do, boy. God knows we've been through it enough," he said, as he stuffed the shotgun shells into my faded bib overalls. "Just remember what I've told you, and be careful." He placed a shotgun in my other hand and gave me a pat on the back that nudged me on my way. Holding the lantern high, I headed across the yard, now more scared than excited. Those first few steps I took as a 9-year-old were the toughest I've ever taken. Some of my fondest memories are the time spent at my grandparents' farm deep in the Missouri Ozarks. Located 3 miles up a valley, or holler, as they call it in the hills, the farm was home of 3 generations of my family. The old two-story farmhouse was typical for the hills. A clear, spring-fed creek ran only a few yards from the front door, past the barn and the other outbuildings. The house was at the end of a dead-end road, surrounded on 3 sides by steep evergreen and hardwood-covered hills. The highest of the hills was simply referred to as the mountain, because it was one of the highest points in the state of Missouri. Back in 1962, the year I headed up the mountain that dark morning, most of America was in the middle of rapid modernization. Not so in the backcountry around the farm. Life had changed little since my dad was born in the house decades before. The primitivism of the mountains made them a sanctuary for wildlife. Small game was abundant, and deer and turkeys had never been pushed or shot out of the rough backcountry. Hunting was a way of life, as much as means of putting food on the table, as it was recreation. Like previous generations, I was educated at an early age. I listened to men tell old hunting tales and tagged along on squirrel hunts before I was 5. I loved it all, but turkeys held a particular fascination to me. They seemed to possess an almost mystical quality. They were rarely seen, but always there. I can remember one spring morning like yesterday, black storm clouds were marching over the mountain, and Pop and I were hurrying to get the last of the chores done. With the first rumble of thunder came a gobble from a nearby ridge, then another, and another. I stood there, my mouth hanging open in amazement as the hills around the farm came alive with gobbles. Pop finally snapped me out of my trance, and we made it to the house just as the big raindrops banged down on the tin roof. As a youngster, I had turkeys on my mind constantly. I badgered poor Grandpa relentlessly, asking him to retell stories about turkey hunting when he was young. Looking back, I now realize he showed a great deal of patience and answered most questions to my satisfaction, except for one. When will I be old enough to go turkey hunting? Someday, was his standard answer. One fall day, his answer changed. The smell of homemade bread was in the air as we cut wood for the cook stove. Pausing to watch me work, Pop smiled and said out of the blue, Ray, I think you'll be big enough by next spring. He didn't need to explain. I knew exactly what he meant. A little later, he gave me what became my prized possession, my very own turkey call. Grandpa had made it by hand, using a piece of slate from the chalkboard at a one-room schoolhouse. For a striker, he'd cut a piece of cedar from a fence post and fit it at the bottom of a hollowed-out corn cob. That call was my life, and I practiced religiously. Teachers took the call away from me more than once for using it at school. Grandma said I sounded like a cat caught in the fence, and Pop kept telling me to keep practicing. The winter of 1961-1962 was the longest of my life, but eventually it ended. Turkey season was only a week away when Pop shook me awake one cold April morning and said, Get up, we're going up on a mountain for a while. I did my best to keep up with him in the pre-dawn darkness as we crossed the creek, headed across the dew-covered pasture, and found the old trail the generations of my family had traveled that would take us up the mountain. We walked quietly until we came to a huge oak at the junction of two ridges. I started to ask one of a dozen questions that were floating in my mind, but Grandpa quickly silenced me with his fingers to his lips. Shh! Cupping his hands around his mouth, he let loose an imitation of a barred owl. Imagine how I felt when a turkey gobbled down the ridge to the northwest. We stood there for a while and listened to the sounds of turkeys gobbling all over the hills. Each time one called, the bird in front of us rifled back a reply. As we turned to leave, Pop whispered, This is the place, boy. You want to sit here with your back against that big oak, facing down that ridge. Use your call, and whatever you do, don't move until you're ready to come home. I was a bundle of nerves and anticipation the night before my hunt. Hoping to make the next day arrive faster, I slipped into bed after supper, already wearing my hunting clothes, except for my oversized brown jacket and old tennis shoes. Sleeping was slow to come. I lay in bed listening to the calls of the whippoorwills and the steady sound of the stream flowing nearby. I'd been awake for hours when the smell of homemade biscuits and frying bacon and eggs drifted upstairs. Normally, I'd have devoured that breakfast in front of me in a matter of minutes, but not this morning. I picked at the meal and never took my eyes off my grandpa. When he broke the news that I'd be hunting alone, I was heartbroken. For years, I'd pictured us hunting together. The thought of trying for one of those mountain phantom birds alone was beyond my young imagination. I tried to present myself as a man as I headed toward the creek. In some ways, today brought the realization of a lifelong dream. I was going up on the mountain to try to kill a turkey. The fact that I was carrying Grandpa's favorite shotgun was an accomplishment, but inside I was scared as I've ever been. My hands full, I had trouble crossing the stream. Midway across, I missed a stepping stone and ended up knee-deep in cold water. I made my way across the pasture, wet shoes squeaking every step. I'd walked the trail to the top of the mountain a dozen times, but never had it seemed so long and so frightening. I finally arrived at the big oak, put out the lantern, and sat down. I strained to remember everything my grandpa had told me as I quietly slipped the blue paper shells into the pump gun. I sat there shivering from both cold and fear, desperately hoping Pop would come walking up the trail. With the reddening of the eastern horizon came the sounds of life in the timber. At first, I only heard songbirds, and I began to relax a little. Then came the eight-note call of the barred owl. I caught my breath when the turkey gobbled from down the ridge. With shaking hands, I picked up the slate call, but couldn't use it. I was afraid. Afraid I'd goof up and scare the turkey and ruin my dream. Again and again, I tried to rub the cedar against the slate, but each time I pulled back. Finally, I shut my eyes, swallowed a huge lump in my throat, and shakingly rubbed the peg against the call. I winced at the god-awful noise it produced. Whether it was a response to my call or just coincidence, I'll never know. But the gobbler sounded off. Several more times I tried to force some yelps from the homemade slate call, but couldn't. I finally dropped the call in frustration and clutched the gun that was resting on my knee. I waited and listened to the birds gobbling. I could tell they were not moving. Suddenly came the soft yelps of a hen turkey behind me. I began to panic, fearing the hen would call the gobblers away from me. I started to get up and move closer to the hen, but suddenly I remembered Pop saying, Whatever you do, boy, don't move. Even though it looked hopeless, I stayed. Soon the birds were calling almost nonstop, and the two gobblers were heading my way. Then I realized that the hen was actually a blessing. To get to her, the gobblers would have to walk right past me. Since I was too nervous to call, she was my only hope. I could hear the two toms getting closer to each other, but wasn't prepared for what came next. From just below the ridge came the loud noises of deep turkey fur, flapping wings, and feathered bodies thumping together. I didn't know it at the time, but the two birds were fighting for the hen. I was shaking so hard I thought for sure the turkeys would see me, and the end of the gun barrel was drawing circles the size of donuts. Hearing the sounds of tree limbs breaking, I watched a big turkey rise through the trees and sail out across the valley. A loud, triumphant gobble sounded from the scene of the battle, and the hen responded with a series of clucks and yelps. My pounding heart went into overdrive. Breathing was hard, and my black-rimmed glasses started to fog. The next time the tom sounded off, he was so close I could hear a rattle in his gobble. Like a ghost, he suddenly appeared to my right, head tucked back, feathers puffed out, and wings dragging the ground. My first response was to swing the gun and shoot, but in the back of the mind, I could hear Pop stressing, "Never move a muscle when you can see the turkey's head. If you do, he'll spot you for sure. And remember to aim it where the base of the neck joins the body." Seconds seemed like hours, but I waited. When the bird stepped behind a big hickory, I twisted my body, cocked the hammer, and raised the gun. There was a deafening boom as he opened the door, and the turkey stepped back into view. In my haste, I tucked the stock under my arm, and the old Winchester raised up and struck me in the face, bloodying my nose and sending my glasses flying. Holding onto the gun with one hand, I rummaged through the leaves, found my broken glasses, poked them on my face as I ran to where I'd last seen the bird. My foot caught a root, and I tumbled down the ridge. When I finally stopped rolling, I looked up, and there he was, stretched out, his feathers glistening in the sunlight. I arrived down at the farm, soaking wet, covered with mud and blood, half dragging and half carrying a turkey that weighed half as much as I did. Grandpa heard my shouts and was waiting for me. He admired the bird, congratulated me, and then laughingly said, "You'd better run along and get yourself cleaned up before your grandma has a fit." I learned a lot about turkey calling that April morning, and I've learned a lot since. In fact, I've learned enough to make my living at it. I present seminars all across America, appear on hunting DVDs, have an outdoor radio show, and I hunt turkeys on television, working full-time in the outdoor industry. Grandma and Grandpa had to move off the farm and into a small community nearby. We lost my grandpa back in 1976, and Grandma continued to tease me about sounding like a cat caught in the fence. It wasn't too long after Grandpa passed away that the entire family was gathered at Grandma's. As usual, the talk turned to hunting and someone brought up the subject of my first turkey. My eyes began to moisten as I walked over and leaned against the fence to look out towards the mountain that held so many fond memories of me and my pop. A few seconds later, I felt Grandma's hand softly rub my shoulder as she said, "You're thinking of Pop, aren't you?" Never taking my eyes off the mountain, I bit my lip and nodded my head. She lovingly moved in beside me and softly said, "Ray, do you remember that hen on the mountain the morning you killed your first turkey?" I looked at her, swallowed hard, and said, "Yes, Ray, that wasn't a real hen behind you. That was your grandpa."
Thanks for joining us for Eyes on the Outdoors National Radio Show. Share the outdoors with others and always be a positive role model for hunting, gun ownership, and conservation. We'll see you next time around the campfire. Be safe out there in the woods and on the water. Say goodbye, Peanut.
The flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take